Welcome to the FemTech Health Podcast. Today, we're joined by Dr. Alexandra Dubinskaya, a urogynecologist and menopause specialist. We're going to dive into all things related to pelvic health, sexual health, and menopause. You're going to learn about the importance of addressing gaps in women's care, the benefits of vaginal estrogen, and the impact of hormones on pelvic and sexual health. All right, let's get started with today's show.
Hi, I'm here today with Dr. Alexandra Dubinskaya. She is a urogynecologist, a certified menopause practitioner, a female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgeon. She is the chairperson of the Communications Committee for the International Society of Sexual Medicine. Alexandra, thank you for being here today. I'm so excited to talk to you. Helping women achieve better pelvic, sexual, and menopausal health is so important to us. And I want to tell everybody she is the founder of the Los Angeles Institute for Pelvic and Sexual Health. Welcome today. I know you know lots of my friends work in this work, so I'm super excited to have you here. Tell us a little bit about how you got involved in pelvic health and sexual health and just, you know, where you're, how that passion happened.
Of course. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to share with you like my story and what I do. Well, I think I should start with that I grew up in Russia and I went into medical school because I wanted to make a difference. So I went through medical school and I did the general surgery residency and I wanted to get the best training possible. And at that time I thought, okay, that best training would be in the United States. So I moved to the United States and very quickly realized that, oh, you need to be able to speak English in order to practice medicine in the United States. So I did that. And then I had to take all the like USMLE steps, like all the exams that American graduate take in order to confirm my diploma. And I really wanted to help women. So I went into the OBGYN field and I loved it. But what I noticed during my training is there is no place for complicated things in OBGYN world, meaning if you postpartum and you're dealing with postpartum issues, women tend to not get enough help other than like check up at 6 weeks and you're good to go. Or if you're going through the perimenopause, if you stop having kids, all the issues that you're having, it's kind of those issues are brushed off. And you like there is no real like curriculum focusing on all these issues in the OBGYN training. So I really wanted to address those gaps in women's care. And I loved urogynecology. And when I like first start working with the women who like come to urogynecologist, I noticed that they're sharing so much with me. And I thought like, oh, maybe because I have an accent, so they don't feel so threatened by me. So they like start sharing information. But then I realized that it's not because of the accent. It's just because I was willing to listen and they were felt comfortable enough and they were sharing all of it. And I think also because I think about myself as a compassionate person, I was so impressed with how many issues women are dealing with. So I really wanted to focus on it. So when I finished my OBGYN training, I moved to Los Angeles and did a fellowship in urogynecology, or like a fancy name of female pelvic medicine reconstructive surgery, at Cedars-Sinai. So I basically spent 3 years doing surgeries for pelvic reconstruction to treat stress urinary incontinence, overactive bladder, pelvic organ prolapse. And also because majority of patients who are having those issues, they also have sexual dysfunction. It's kind of these two conditions, like pelvic floor dysfunction and sexual dysfunction, they go hand in hand. So, and I'm very passionate about sexual health of women because there is basically like no place for that as well. Like urologists, they usually deal with like men's sexual health, but they kind of like tend to skip women. And in OBGYN world, women just ask like, oh, are you sexually active? Yes, no. Are you having pain with sex? Oh, okay. And kind of like moving on. So I really wanted to make sure that I can provide the best care for women and kind of that encompass all of it, like pelvic floor, sexual function, and also hormonal management, because it's also part why all these problems like happening. So when I finished fellowship, I started my own practice, Institute for Pelvic and Sexual Health, because I think that describes best of what I do, and that I help women from all like pelvic floor condition, sexual health, to kind of get like a care 360 degrees in one spot.
Mm-hmm. I love this because I definitely think there's, you know, there's spaces, right, in the medical field that women are sort of missed, you know, in those spaces throughout their lifespan. And, you know, so much of, you know, like even postpartum wise, you know, if a mom gets her 6-week checkup, she's kind of said, oh, see you later. You look good. And the thing is at that point in time, you know, the uterus, the cervix, everything hasn't even moved back up into position yet. And we're sort of cutting them loose, you know, out in the world. And, you know, there's no place for them. And I love it the way you're saying, you know, even in the perimenopause, menopause space, it's like we're trying to make a space for them. Do you feel like that urogynecology world is better sort of at delivering that because they have more time and are better listeners? Or is it just maybe the way you took that and ran with it?
Well, I don't think it's for everyone. I think everyone has a particular interest and good at something. I think it's just general OBGYN is such like a broad field. And till this day, I still don't know why OB and GYN kept together, because they different. And like, you're basically doing so many different things, but you're not focusing on one. Mm-hmm. And I think with urogynecology, we focus on the pelvic floor. And there are a lot of conditions, but I think we can see the things from a different perspective. And definitely we get more education in the like different issues that's happening to our pelvic floor compared to like general OBGYN or urology.
Mm-hmm. And how big is the urogynecology space? Like how many people are in that space?
Right. So statistics is, so you can become a urogynecologist from OBGYN background. And every year, about like 76 people graduate from different fellowship programs. And you can become urogynecologist from the urology background. And there are about like 12 like graduate per year. And again, oh, gotcha. Don't quote me on these numbers, but it's like average numbers. So let's say like 90 people every year graduate and they go and practice. They usually, urogynecologists, they usually stays in the bigger centers. Usually you have like one or two urogynecologists in one practice. It's possible to find it. I think the issue is that a lot of women, they don't know that we exist. And it's very frustrating because first of all, like women can't find help with their condition. They think that it's, oh, it's only me. It's only me who is like 7 weeks postpartum. I still can't have sex and I'm peeing myself, but probably all my friends like super dry and having wild sex. So women feel isolated.
Yeah, it's 100% true. I think that's exactly right. Yeah, you do feel isolated, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And then like it's sad that women can't find help. And also it's sad that people like me, we spend so many years training and learning and practicing, and then people still don't know about us.
I totally understand, because even, you know, in my world of pelvic health and the physical therapy, you know, because I do it every day, I think everybody knows about it. And, you know, I get in some new communities or I'm doing work in new areas and I realize like, oh, there's absolutely no understanding. And yet this is a huge metropolitan area. And, you know, there's maybe one or two urogynecologists or maybe, you know, and so how do you get the referral pattern so that people start to understand like, hey, this is actually a thing, right? Urogynecology, pelvic floor PT, we work together all the time. And it's such an important component for people, do you know what I mean, in their life. But we still have, you know, people seeing, you know, I just had a pelvic organ prolapse patient who basically was told by the regular OBGYN group, oh, no, you don't have any other choice. You have to have surgery. And she's like, I don't want surgery. I want to try this first. And they're like, oh, well, we're not going to give you a referral. And I'm like, whoa.
Yeah.
That means.
Yeah. You kind of have to like jump through so many hoops to like just be seen and get that input. And it doesn't mean that you necessarily like have to do something, but at least being educated and know that that condition like super prevalent and you're not alone. I think it's already empowering. And then with information that you get, you can make your own decision on like what you want to do with that.
So, Alexandra, just so we're kind of segueing a little bit, but, you know, is that kind of the passion behind you starting your own institute? I mean, you know, your own founding this business was because you know that the need is so great?
Yes. And also another thing is, I think, like, the problem with working in the big hospitals and working with a lot of insurances is that you're being stuck in this pattern of having to see like 4, 5, 6 patients per hour in order to like maintain that required like flow of patients to get like adequately paid by insurances and everything, that's not allowing people to actually get to the bottom of the problem. Because it's not as simple like, oh, you broke your arm, okay, let's fix it. But even though you still get more time to like even discuss about that, but there is like so many issues going on that you kind of like have to have a longer appointments. And the only way to do it is to basically be in the private practice where you can talk, where you have a luxury of actually sitting down, making sure that woman is comfortable and talk about all the aspects and how can we address it? Because it's not only about like, oh, okay, let's do surgery. Oh, you put a surgical candidate, let's not do that. It's about finding out what the solutions are and which option works particularly for this patient. And I think I really care about this like interpersonal relationship. So that's one of the reasons to have this like one place where you can evaluate 360 degree and make sure that when you leave, you like have all the information. And obviously it's a brand new center. So I'm still in the process of working and making it like to grow it. So, but eventually I like the vision that I have, I think is just women can spend one day and you get like full evaluation of all pelvic floor, all the sexual issues that might going on.
I love this. And it sounds such like a holistic approach. And I think so much of the time, you know, like in medicine now, you know, we're hurrying by things. And I think, you know, that sort of brings up the whole sexual piece of it. Like you said earlier, it's so often, oh, are you having sex? Okay, good. Okay, we're going to move right along and not really recognize.
Yeah. Oh, have a glass of wine.
Yeah,
that's like the best one. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're not really recognizing like, hey, people need skill sets and tools and things to help them, right? Sort of figure out like, okay, well, where am I in this? And what might I need? And if they don't have time with you, how will they know?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So if, you know, I know you kind of mentioned before, you know, the, you know, stress urinary incontinence, overactive bladder, and then, you know, you talked a little bit about pelvic organ prolapse. And, you know, what is your idea when you look at a woman like holistically, as far as, you know, knowing maybe, hey, you know, they're 56 years old, you know, they might have a little bit of a pelvic organ prolapse starting. You can see that, you know, they've already been through perimenopause. Now they're in menopause. Talk a little bit about like hormones. Talk a little bit about maybe how you would look at somebody like that.
Well, I think it's very important to focus of like, okay, what bothers them? If woman doesn't have any symptoms of the prolapse, she doesn't feel like vaginal fullness. She doesn't feel like she's sitting on the marble. Doesn't like nothing bothers her during sex. Even if I see the prolapse on exam, I usually explain to them, the moment we need to address prolapse is when you feel uncomfortable, not when I see the prolapse. Because there are multiple situations where I can see the prolapse, but nothing bothers patient, or I can barely see the prolapse, but patient is very much bothered. So I'm not the person to tell her when it's a good time to, let's say, do surgery. It has to come from the patient when they're uncomfortable. And obviously, if they, as in your example, if the woman is perimenopausal, so I definitely discuss with them importance of using vaginal estrogen. And even if right now they might not feel the symptoms, experience the symptoms, you're using it as a preventative measure. Similar to like how you use a moisturizer on your face every morning and your skin feels nice and good, so you don't even think about it. So vagina also needs some attention, and you do need to start investing it like earlier so you're not suffering with consequences down the line. And I think a lot of like adherence to their regimen, to the medication, also comes from understanding why you're doing, why your doctor telling you like, oh, you need to use vaginal estrogen. Here, go pick up your prescription. But when women understand how it affects the vaginal wall, how lubrication affects pH in the vagina, how it prevents you from having urinary tract infection, and how it actually can decrease the symptoms of the prolapse, I think then they're more motivated to get those vaginal estrogen and use them.
You know, that there seems to be so much. Go ahead. Well, fear about estrogen, I mean, I'm just going to be straight up with you. You know, there's a lot of camps with this of, you know, people who are pro for it and people who are not. So I really want to talk a little bit with you about that, because I think that's a little bit of what I hear, you know, in my practice. I'll have, you know, women come in. Oh, yeah, I was given, you know, this vaginal estrogen. Have you started using it? Oh, no, I'm afraid to use it. Or I'm afraid, you know, and so I think this whole, you know, demystifying this whole idea of like, okay, you know, why is that there? Why are we talking like this? You know, do you like HA? Do you like DHEA in the floor? Do you, you know, think you go right to estrogen? You know, talk a little bit about that, because I think there's so much fear-based stuff happening, circling around estrogen.
Totally. I totally agree with you. And there are so many things like working against us, people who support using the vaginal estrogen. Like, it traced back to WHI study when they were doing the systemic hormone replacement therapy, and the word estrogen got such a bad PR. So the moment you say estrogen, people start thinking cancer. But I wish people would, like, when you say estrogen, gonna think about like vitality, usefulness, UTI free life, good sex. So, and I think I'm working over like towards that direction, but I think it will take time. And also, don't forget about this black box warning that you get when you get this little tube of the vaginal estrogen, and then they have this like laundry list of what, like, what's going to happen, and you're going to die. Like, it's very terrifying. And until this day, even though we know that everything that's discussed in that black box warning is not true and not pertinent to the vaginal estrogen, until we remove that black box warning, women still going to read it. They're still going to be scared. So, and when you're not warning them ahead of time, like, hey, you're going to pick up the vaginal estrogen and there's going to be a lot of scary things, you kind of need to warn them and explain to them why, like, it's not related to their local vaginal estrogen, that it's not a systemic hormone replacement therapy. And it does take some like reinforcement, because all those fears that they were not like born overnight and they're not going to die overnight. So you do need to reinforce it. And sometimes, no matter what you do, women still make their own choice, which is okay. So in that case scenario, I just explain to them what might happen and what symptoms they might experience, like painful sex, discomfort. Like, you might notice that vagina gets smaller. It's more uncomfortable. You're more aware of your vagina. So that will all tell you that, okay, it might be time to start vaginal estrogen. And even if you're still uncomfortable, there are other options. You can use vaginal moisturizers that are not going to treat the cause of the problem, but it will help relieve the symptoms. There are also lasers, and I know there are a lot of controversy around the lasers, but again, for example, CO2 laser has been used in Europe for many years, and women who had lasers done, it helped them. So it's alternative. If you don't want to use vaginal estrogen, it's okay to use a laser. And I know we all for like evidence-based medicine, but I think sometimes, especially in the area of medicine that's so like under-investigated as a women's health, sometimes we do need to do the treatments that maybe we don't have a full data on. But if it helps, and it doesn't hurt, it's worth trying.
Well, I think you hit on some really important points that people are getting mixed up between systemic hormone replacement therapy and localized use of estrogen in the floor. So let me ask you too, like with application wise, because I just want your opinion about it so people can hear. You know, when we're applying it, of course, in our pelvic PT world, we, you know, we're telling people, hey, we like them to put it on. Do you know what I mean? Utilizing, you know, on their finger and kind of getting it into the tissue, right? But you know, I know there's plunger applications and I know there's suppositories. And talk to me a little bit about that so people can understand, like maybe there's different reasons you put them on in different kinds of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say like vaginal estrogen, it's similar how like your face care routine, everyone likes different. Some people like oil-based stuff. Some people like water-based stuff. Some people like applicators, many different things. So with vaginal estrogen, there are different ways to deliver vaginal estrogen. And there is not like one size fits all. It's all personal. What do you prefer? You prefer to use cream? Perfect. You like to insert tablets or little capsules? Great. You like to put a ring for 3 months and it's just going to stay there for 3 months and you don't need to think about it? It's like also possible. The only limitation on that is what your insurance will cover and what copay you can afford. Right. So it's unfortunate, but you can always try. There are a lot of like different coupons that you can try if you like want to use only like little capsules. That's the only thing. You can always try. But let's say cream. Cream is the easiest to get. Because even if, let's say, your insurance doesn't cover or you have a high copay, there is online pharmacy that Mark Cuban founded, Cost Plus Drugs, where you can get like a tube of estrogen cream that will last you for 3-4 months for like about like almost like $30, which is, I think it's pretty good price for that. So when you, let's say you, yeah, right? It's like some people have like $100, $200 copay per month. So $30 for the vaginal cream that will last you for 3 months, I think it's a really like a steal.
100%.
Yeah. So, and then how will you apply? And it's all like personal preference. There is the applicator that comes with it. And you can use like, there is a marker, you put a cream directly from the tube on that applicator, you insert it in the vagina, you push a plunger, and that's it. And it's comfortable for some people for like, let's say, who has like a poor dexterity, they can't use their fingers. They need that help. Oh, certain body habitus where it's difficult to reach to the vaginal tissue and place it. There are a lot of people who has some emotional, like sexual trauma. They would rather use that applicator rather than experiencing this hand vagina contact. And there are people who totally fine with putting like a cream on a finger and inserting it in vagina, rub it around. So I usually recommend them to try both ways, see which one you prefer and go from there. And also some people, you know, they were like, I don't want to like wash one extra thing, like wash this applicator. So it's totally fine. There's no right or wrong reason, like way to doing it.
And so how many days a week are you suggesting? And do you suggest in the morning or at night? These are the questions I hear every day from people. So that's why I'm asking you.
Yeah, totally. So, well, it like the frequency of use depends on the formulation that you get. For example, like estrace cream, you use it 3 times a week, like 1 gram. Or if Premarin cream, you use it 2x a week. So it's all individual, or like in vaginal inserts 2x a week, ring 1x in 3 months. I recommend to use them at night just because when you're laying flat, it allows cream to absorb better. So it's not going to just like fall out while you're like walking around. You still will have some discharge next morning, but it's a good discharge. It means that your vagina like becoming more and more alive. So, and even that discharge kind of like coming out of the vagina, it still kind of like soothes and moisturizes the area around. So it's not a big deal. And also a lot of women ask me like, oh, what if Like, I know I'm supposed to use cream after I have sex, but what if I put a cream and then life happened and I had sex? What's going to happen? So, well, I usually tell them that their partner is going to be totally fine. He's not going to turn into a pumpkin. He's not going to become a woman. But you just, like, wasted your cream, basically. So, but if it happened once in a while, it's okay.
Exactly. So how long does it sort of take for a woman to like sort of feel the net out or the good effects of this? Because so many times, you know, people start using it and then, oh, I don't think it did anything. And I think, okay, you used it for what, a week or two? Like, it's not enough, right?
Yeah, because all those changes that happens, again, they happens over a course of years. So you do need to give it some time. And I think it's also like a really good point that like to bring up with the patient to let them know, hey, it's not a magic pill. You're not like when you get the cream under eye cream, it's not like next morning you have like amazing bright eyes. It takes time. So vagina is the same. So at least I usually tell them 6 to 12 weeks. For some women, it starts working earlier, but they rather them tell me like, hey, you know, you said it's going to be 6 to 12 weeks, but I'm already feeling the effect. I'd rather hear that feedback than, oh, it's been X amount of weeks and I still like not feeling it.
Mm-hmm. No, I appreciate you saying that. That encourages people. Hey, you know, some people are like, oh, it's so messy and I have all this stuff to do. And I love your analogy of like what you and I do with our face anyway, because that's a great way to say it to people. Hey, you're already taking care of your face. Don't you want to take care of the other beautiful parts of you too, right? Like, but exactly. I love the picture of that because that helps people realize like, hey, you wouldn't not do it for your face, right? But then totally. I think about the special thing. I mean, the floor is such an important area, right? And, you know, not just for sexual health, but for, you know, bowel and bladder health and, you know, the muscles of the floor, they work all day long. If you think about it, you know, they're tonic muscles, they're contracting and holding on all day long. And it's like, why wouldn't we pay attention and take care of them? We take care of other muscles when they don't feel good or they don't feel right. So I think this whole idea of perimenopause to menopause. So tell us a little too, like how are you starting them on it? Like what time frames, like as soon as they go, you know, to the perimenopause standpoint or not till they're in menopause, or tell us that.
Yeah, absolutely. And first, I also wanted to add to what you just said. What I very commonly hear is when you start talking about the estrogen and everything, women tend to say like, oh, I'm not sexually active. I don't need that. So for some reason, we kind of think about our vagina in like, as an attachment to like, okay, if you're having sex, that you take care of it. And if you don't, you kind of forget about it. So it's similar to like, I usually ask them, are you brushing your teeth only when you're dating someone? Or are you like brushing them every day? So I think we just need to change how we think about these things. Because like, again, vagina is for you. It's your organ. Same as your pelvic floor. It's your organ. And doesn't matter, like, if you're in a relationship, like, where you work or anything, like, you still need to take care of that area, not neglecting it. So how do I start? Well, it depends what is the main issue brought patient in. I'm, like, noticing more and more women who is in their, like, mid-40s. They still have periods. But actually, what brings them in is like this discomfort, this like vaginal burning, or they start experiencing this vicious cycle of like they're having bacterial vaginosis, they're having yeast, and the pain and the sex just hurts. And when you do exam, like you can see how it's like, it's still pink, but it's not that pink. Like it's when you
it's too light. Yeah, too light, right?
Like, yes. And also in the area that's not inside of the vagina, but outside, like around 12 o'clock, around the urethra, like at 6 o'clock, you start noticing that, like, oh, if you just, like, just briefly look, you not wouldn't even notice when you're just trying to quickly get a pap smear. But when you look, and if you, like, need, you can always get, like, a colposcope and do, like, vulvoscopy to look at those changes. But there is this, like, subtle changes that happening. And when you give them the hormones that they're missing, they actually start feeling significantly better. And why I'm saying the hormones that they are missing, because it's not only about vaginal estrogen. And I usually try to explain to patients, so it's like a little bit easier to understand, that we have, like, from hymenal ring and outside, we have a lot of not only estrogen, but testosterone receptors. And if we only give estrogen, it may not help completely. So for this, like, younger women, I often either give them like DHEA, the intrarosa, or I give them compounding estrogen testosterone to help with that outside tissue, because that's where they might feel this like pain on initial penetration or like tearing sensation. And then if, let's say, everything looks good from outside and there is just like slight changes, like the rugae, like the only place in your body where you wanted to have the wrinkles is vagina. And when you start 100%. Losing these wrinkles, yes, that's like not like it means that like it's starting to happening. You start going through the like perimenopause, menopause. So when you see that there is not as much wrinkles, like it's also like could be like, okay, that's starting. Do you want to start on the vaginal estrogen? Let's try and see. So, and a lot of women can benefit of it. Also, another common situation that I see is women like late 30s, 40s, they have an IUD, hormonal IUD. And usually when you get that IUD, women not informed that it still might affect your hormonal levels and it might affect, give you a little bit more vaginal dryness. So I commonly see women with who has a vaginal dryness with IUD in place. So I add them vaginal, I add vaginal estrogen and it helps tremendously with their discomfort. And when I, go ahead.
No. I really, it's super important that you just brought that up because I think so many times, you know, people maybe have this, you know, IUD and then they're just so frustrated because they don't realize that they are drier and then they feel bad with themselves. Oh, like I'm not, you know, getting my natural secretions like maybe I was before. So then it can create tension between their partners and themselves thinking, oh, well, you're not into me. Because you don't have all these secretions like you had before. Yeah. And you're like, no, this is not what's happening. And the same thing I see with a lot of my postpartum women sometimes, you know, yes. That will happen because, you know, they've jumped back into some kind of, you know, right. Hormone, you know, therapy, whether it's contraceptions or whatever. And maybe the texture, the tone of things are changing. And I think it's important what you just said, that there may be some dryness there. Even at a younger age. So maybe we're not waiting till somebody is that old. I know I had one year a gynecologist as a friend of mine say, look, there are some women postpartum that she would like to have them on estrogen for a whole year postpartum so that they were safe postpartum from, because they looked a little bit like, hey, maybe a PLP was going to show up or kind of, you know, that tissue just didn't look like they wanted them to look. And I think it's important for people to understand that they're not supposed to be out there suffering during this early time frame either.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think like this belief that like, oh, no hormones for you until you stop having your periods. It's very like it like that belief is start to die. And I really hope it will like die completely very soon because there are so many other reasons to. Right. Like other conditions, like you brought up postpartum women, when they breastfeeding, they have a hormone levels of like postmenopausal women. So they do develop this genitourinary syndrome of breastfeeding, of postpartum. So it's very important to add vaginal estrogen because it helps with healing. If there is like a vaginal delivery, a lot of tearing, it will help with healing. It will help with rehabilitation of pelvic floor muscle, and it will help with that lubrication. So if you like whenever you're ready to have sex, if the sex will hurt, you're less likely to engage in sexual encounter. Absolutely. Like next time. So it's very important to keep that area healthy, controlled, in check. And also people who take hormonal contraception pills, not only IUD. Like hormonal contraception pills is like worst enemy for the vulva, for labia. Like when you see women who've been on the hormonal contraception pills for like 15, 20 years, they look like the genital area looks like the area of someone who is 80 years old without the hormones. And but because nobody really looks at the labia, at the clitoris, they think that it's kind of normal. And in that case scenario, you absolutely have to add like estrogen testosterone cream to kind of bring the life to that tissue.
I you know, I'm going to just say this again for everybody. You know, if you have painful sex, right? And if you're 30 years old to 40 years old, you're still not too young for someone to address this. I need people to understand you're not supposed to be suffering while you're supposed to be having, you know, fun with your partner. It's just not what we're supposed to be experiencing. So if that is having, and it is especially in the postpartum timeframes, I mean, I have women sometimes who postpartum, they don't feel good, right? Because the tissue is not healthy, right? So they need to know that it's they're okay to actually go to their provider and ask for help for this, because it's not normal. And somehow or another, we've sort of normalized this idea like, oh, too bad for you. You're in the postpartum time. You know, this is just the way it is. And we're like, no, we need intervention. So I love that you brought up the women in the 30s, because I think somehow or another, they're not voicing what needs to be voiced. And because they're embarrassed or they're afraid or they feel ashamed, and nothing feels right down there.
Right. And, you know, there are so many things happening in postpartum. And like, I got to experience it like firsthand. I just had my baby like 7 months ago.
Oh.
The things that you go through, like nobody can prepare you for that. And there are so many things that you can control. And compared to like vaginal health that we can help, you just use this cream and it's going to do wonders to you and it's going to help you heal. So I feel like that part we can take care of. But there are so many things that like, nobody else can help you with like extra support, the mental health that women going through. Like there's so much more goes like there that the vaginal health, like pretty simple. We can help. Just like know that you're not alone and it's okay to ask your provider. And if your provider doesn't know what to do, like find another provider. But it's very easily to address and let's just solve something like small that we can solve. So you have time to deal with like bigger things in postpartum period.
Absolutely. And we don't want people shying away from, you know, sexual health, you know, sexual activities and all of that, you know, because of pain patterns. And you said it earlier before, and I think it's an important thing to reiterate is that if someone has, you know, had a baby, said, hey, I'm going to start having intercourse. And, you know, they don't feel good on that first or second time, they tend to do exactly what you said. They shy away from it because they think, oh, my gosh, it's going to be painful again. And then their partner is more hesitant or they're more hesitant. And then, you know, the cycle starts to go. And then, you know, we're having people who have, you know, had not had sex for 7 or 8 months. And you're like, OK, hold on, you know. I mean, the beauty of orgasm and sex and all of that, right, is it brings so much great blood flow to the floor to help with healing processes and to help tissue regain, you know, the rugae and the pliability that we do need. And I think that's an important thing so that if they know that there's things that are available to them and they realize like, hey, you don't need to be embarrassed. You don't need to feel shameful. There's nothing that's wrong with you that this has gone on. This is just the way some of our bodies go, you know, after having kids.
Yes, absolutely. And I think if men would be giving birth and going through everything that we're going through, I'm sure they would have like vaginal estrogen, like in the bathrooms, just like for free, like, hey, take it, feel better.
Well, I want to bring up just what you kind of said too about a little bit of the testosterone and the, you know, the estrogen, because I think people don't maybe understand that. So can you just review a little again in the pelvic floor, the uptake of where that testosterone happens? Because I think that's valuable too, because, you know, some of my moms, you know, after baby, they'll be like, I don't have any libido. You know, I have no like drive anymore and those sorts of things. And then you look at their floor, like you just said, I mean, like really look at it and you're like, oh, well there, that's why. So tell everybody about that a little bit again, okay?
Yeah, yeah. So I think I would like touch base on like 2 points. One is that like in general testosterone and then on like desire. So the testosterone, right? The way how we develop, we're very similar, like women and men, we're very similar in our development, right? So the areas that has like more sensitivity to the estrogen, like vagina, right? The urethra. And some areas more sensitive to testosterone, has more receptors to testosterone, like just like introitus, like a vaginal opening, labia. So, and just to like conceptually think about it, it's like from the hymenal ring inside, more estrogen receptor, from hymenal ring outside, more like estrogen testosterone receptors. So, and you basically apply the testosterone that outside area at the vaginal opening that can help regain that tissue like quality and color. Helps a lot for postpartum women, for women who is on oral hormonal contraception pills, and postpartum and postmenopausal women as well. In terms of sexual drive, especially for postpartum, when you think about like sex drive, you think about like social factors, emotional factors, biological factors. And in a postpartum period, we have everything against us. We have like the major life event just happened to us. Like we like sleep deprived. Like I went through OBGYN residency, but I never been so sleep deprived of like having a baby. You also feel overstimulated because of like this little human always needing something from you, being dependent on you to like survive. Other people expect a lot of things from you, like get quickly in shape, do this, like start running marathon in 2 weeks after delivery, like all this stuff. So it puts a lot of pressure on you. Also, you're not feeling okay with all your hormones, which like fluctuates when you, especially if you're breastfeeding, like the vaginal dryness, postpartum depression, like you're not feeling sexy, and sex is definitely not one of your priorities. And even when you get to this magical 6 weeks mark, you still might be not there. Like some people who had the easy birth, they might just like, oh, like it's fine, and who have a lot of support. And some people who had a very traumatic birth, had a lot of tearing, they will need significantly longer time. So just understanding where you're at in your life helps to kind of understand that like, it's okay if you don't want to have sex. You just like went through so much, like it's okay. And as the thing gets better, you might be a little bit more like rested, a little bit more relaxed. And it's still okay to not have that spontaneous desire, because in general, for women, they more commonly have responsive desire, meaning like when your partner does something or initiates and you kind of like, I think I'm actually okay with that. Great, we did that. But it's also okay to not initiate first. It doesn't mean that something's wrong with you. Well, but if, let's say, several months pass by and you physically heal, you're feeling actually like mentally, emotionally okay, but sex is just like not working. You just don't feel like, oh, I just like don't want to have it. And it actually bothers you. It's definitely a good indicator that, okay, let's go talk to the specialist, because there are also other options available, like even FDA approved medications that women can use to help like kind of like kickstart that sex drive. So I think whenever you're in doubt, it's always like very important to talk to people who knows and just discuss it and know your options.
It's interesting. I had a woman who, you know, after her last baby, she was a little bit older, you know, what if can you be considered a geriatric pregnancy, right? And, you know, had an IUD put in, and literally her whole, like, you know, sex life just bottomed out. And she was just so frustrated, you know. But I love what you kind of said, you know, just, you know, about the parts of all the things that happened to us postpartum and recognizing all these psychosocial, the mental health component, the physical component of exhaustion, right? With no sleeping. And, you know, then add on, you know, an IUD. She had never actually had an IUD before. So there was a lot of combinations of things and, you know, excessive, you know, dryness. And it was interesting. You sort of mentioned just, you know, how we become maybe not as spontaneous, but more responsive oriented. And, you know, people might get frustrated with that when actually they're usually the ones, you know, maybe who are the more spontaneous ones, and, you know, is thinking, oh, there's something wrong with me. And I remember distinctly sharing with her, like, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, you know, your body just went through a huge activity. You were a little older than when you had all, you know, your other children. Mm-hmm. And it's okay for you and your partner to maybe experience some things in a different way. And you need to be patient with each other, you know, with it. There's a lot of overstimulation, like you just said, to have a baby. And, you know, it can be perceived in your brain that's just one more overstimulating thing that's coming down the pipe because your body already has so much going on. And so I think people understanding that maybe some of their sexual activity and the way they integrate, they have to be open to integrating a little bit differently, don't you, Zane?
Absolutely. And it might change. It might change how you feel. And also, like, don't forget, when you add any birth control, even though it's a local and supposed to only work on the uterus, it's still what I find. It's still kind of depresses the production of hormones by your ovaries. So in lesser effect than like systemic like oral contraception pills, but there is still effect, and some people may be more sensitive to it, especially if you had your baby like older, you will take longer time to recover. Similar to like if you had like, I don't know, injury on your knee and you in your 20s, you will recover quickly. And if you in your 60s or like 50s and you have a knee injury, it's like, okay, for 2 years, you still feel that knee and it just takes longer for body to recover. And also because you like getting closer to the time where your hormones will change, where you're going to go through perimenopause. So it's actually easier to tip you over. So you might have like more like side effects of those even local hormone replacement hormone therapies for contraception.
So, you know, tell me a little bit, because I know you got specialized in kind of menopausal care. You know, tell me where, you know, how did that happen? Why did you feel that was such a necessary part for you over the next step to do?
Yeah. Well, again, I think majority of patients who I see, they like perimenopausal, postmenopausal. And there is a good reason for it because like we like our body carries this like injury of like childbirth and everything. And then when we go to like perimenopausal, hormonal levels change. Enough years we have been living under the gravity. So all of these things happening, and that's where usually the incontinence happens, pelvic organ prolapse, UTIs. So, and it's been very difficult to like, okay, I'll address your prolapse. But then they go back to the gynecologist, the primary care, and they're saying like, oh, no, we're not going to give you vaginal estrogen. It's like another step that women needs to do. So why not just start them while they're there in your office? Or let's say when they have like tons of issues, they're miserable, they're horrible, and I'm doing surgery on them. I want them to recover well. I want them being optimally healthy. And being optimally healthy also includes being optimally hormonally healthy. So why do I need to send them somewhere else? If I will be taking care of them, I'm going to be doing surgery on them, I want them to feel like they best self so they can recover faster. And it just been a reasonable thing to do to help women stay in the optimal health.
No, I appreciate that. I think that's a great way for people to like realize, you know, this isn't just, oh yeah, you're perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause. Oh, you don't need to go to see your OBGYN anymore. You know, you don't need it. You don't even need anyone to look at your floor, because I've heard that too, you know, where people will tell me, oh, well, you know, I don't even get checked in my floor anymore by anyone. No one ever looks at it, you know, yeah, except us in the pelvic health world. You know, we're looking at people's floors, but I'm just saying, you know, that nobody looks at it. And I think that's a huge frustration that I've seen. And this is why I love your work so much, because you're valuing a woman after her reproductive years.
Absolutely. Yes.
And you're calling out that she should have a quality of life available to her even after she's done her reproductive years. Do you know what I mean? In her pelvic region and with her sexuality, right?
Exactly. And we, like, on average, we spend like one third of our life living in like menopausal age. And usually by that time, right, by that time, the kid's like out of the house. You established career-wise. You know what you want. Like, I feel like at around 50 and up, you kind of like in the prime of like everything that you like achieved. And you know what you want in your like sex life. And that should be years where you actually enjoy the fruits of your labor in every aspect of your life. But then we're being screwed by like losing all these hormones. But also, if we lose like if we become diabetic and we lose like all pancreatic hormones, we receive insulin. We don't get yoga, we don't get mindfulness. We get insulin. If we have thyroid issues, we receive thyroid hormone. Nobody tells us, oh, go drink this magic tea and everything going to be great. So I feel bad that women receive so much disinformation of like, the hormones are bad. You're going to pee your pants because everyone does. Your organs will start falling out because like, oh, well. And you're not going to have sex because, oh, older people don't have sex. So I think it's very sad. And like, I'm kind of like looking forward to like menopause and living those age, because I think it should be like the most fabulous age of your life. And I want every woman to feel that way. So, and we have all the tools to prolong life, to improve quality of life. And I think we should use it. But because of like bad PR, of poorly made studies, of all this like tales that women like hear, like we basically screwing ourselves by not listening to like real information, by like having so much fears. So I think that's very important to kind of like talk about it, educate women so they know and they have the skills so they can live the best years of their life in menopause.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. And this is such a time frame, and it's a huge component of women's lives. I mean, I might have a woman who comes in who maybe hasn't had a partner for, you know, a few years, her partner died or something happened. And, you know, she's, you know, in her late 60s, early 70s, dating somebody, and she wants to be sexually active. And she doesn't even know who to go to, who to talk to, who to have help her so that she can do all of this. And I think that's why, you know, you and I are talking today, to give people the vision that you can still have a quality of life and with your sexual health. You know, think of it, a woman can have an orgasm to the day she dies. You know, she has the ability to do that, right? And then we're trying to help people understand, how do you keep this area of your body, so your pelvic girdle, you know, your low back, your hips, you know, your pelvic floor muscles, as healthy as you can keep them, so that you can have a really good foundation and quality of life, you know, so that part of your body does move well and not dissociate from it. You know, we're not dissociating from our face, like you said before.
Exactly. You know, yes.
Let's not do that, and help people realize, like, this is, you know, if a third of our life is spent during that time frame, we need to have the understanding that we can still have the fun and the joy of all of that, right? And it's not going away just because, you know, we walked into that neighborhood. And I do think the more we have these deep conversations, the more people get the understanding and know even how to ask for it. Because I think that's part of it too, you know. And sometimes, you know, I'll talk to OBGYN about it and they're like, oh, no, I don't do any of that. Like, that's not part of my job. And so I love it that in the Eurogyn world that you're talking about, that you're really looking at saying, hey, how do we build a quality of life and how do we help people have a quality of life throughout their lifespan? But in particular, in this other component where we've sort of, you know, women have been sort of sold the bill of goods. Well, too bad for you, you know. You did your reproductive thing and now it's too late for you. And we're like, no, we now have done so much work. Our kids are older right now. We have the opportunity to have a lot of, you know, a lot more fun in that neighborhood. And yet, you know, people don't feel good enough to do it. And, you know, which brings me to the point of sometimes when people are starting some of this stuff, you know, and the tissue starts to change, they feel things that they don't know what it is and they get scared.
Yeah. So it's also very important to prepare them. Prepare for your best life to start, for feeling your best.
Well, and I think sometimes, you know, like, you know, if people have put some of it, that, you know, the estrace cream on and they bleed a little bit, they get nervous, like, oh, you know, is it a bad thing? And, you know, and us sort of reassuring them like, hey, that's tissue that maybe, you know, was paper thin, you know, or maybe hadn't had anything or anything touch it for such a long period of time that, you know, maybe that's not a bad thing. But if they don't have somebody like you, or, you know, they're not coming to pelvic PT and they don't have anyone to talk about, they'll just put it away in their drawer. And, you know, all these years go by and they, oh yeah, someone gave that to me, you know, 5 or 10 years ago. I just didn't use it because all this little thing happened. So I want people to understand that too. So maybe share a little bit too, like when you start some of these things, if things happen, you know, you can't just, you know, throw it away in the drawer.
Absolutely. And I usually like, I have this like my own spiel, but.
No, when... I love your spiel. Go.
So first of all, we start with access, right? Like, it's very important. So I usually tell them when you show up to the pharmacy, if they tell you like crazy prices, do not just walk away. Call me so we can work on getting like the affordable option. They're out there. Like, it's not because like, don't feel like if you can't afford something that it's like bad or like anything, like everyone has a different budget. We'll work with that. We'll make it work. Second of all, I tell them like I tell them how to use it and everything. And then I always warn them, if your tissue is so bad, you might absorb a little bit more than an average person just because the tissue is like not in the best shape. You might experience some breast tenderness, but that will go away. You might experience a little bit of burning, which is also normal because like your tissue, whatever touches it, is going to burn. If that burning, though, persists and it's uncomfortable, don't just stop using it. Let me know. Because we can use, in those cases, we can use compounding pharmacies that they will come change the base that made for like more sensitive people. So there are still options about like around it. Also, I think because there are so many fears around estrogen, so that I think like some people get like some like psychosomatic effects of like, oh, I had a headache. Or I felt my like arm got numb, or I didn't sleep well. I had a nausea, and they related to the vaginal estrogen. And I totally get it. So I always ask them like, okay, like if you felt that, let's stop using it for a day. Let's see what happens. And then let's restart it. Maybe it will go away. Like most likely it's not due to that small little dose of the vaginal estrogen. There's probably like some other reasons. And again, we talk about safety and everything. And I usually tell them that if something they feel goes wrong, like vaginal bleeding, new symptoms, like don't just stop it. Call me. Even if it's nothing, I would rather you to call me and we can discuss it than you like staying at home and not using it, coming back to me in a year and saying like, hey, you know what? I had vaginal dryness, couldn't have sex, and I still have vaginal dryness and can't have sex, and I haven't used your vaginal estrogen that you prescribed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, help me help you. So communicate with me. Tell me what's going on so we can, like, I can guide you through that process.
Thank you. I love it. Thank you for saying all that. That's so important. I think people need to hear that so they don't get scared, you know, access, how to use it, hey, what is the tissue's response pattern to it? You know, if there's that sensitivity, if there is bleeding, you utilize the communication for all of us so that we can find the right thing for you and actually have that right piece of the puzzle so that you can have your quality of life. I'm just wondering, you know, with pelvic organ prolapse, are you using, you know, the topical before and after? Do you feel like good results with utilizing that with the surgical interventions?
Yeah. So if I have an opportunity, meaning there is enough time between I see the patient and we go into operating room, I always recommend to use the vaginal estrogen because the good tissue is easier to work with and it's also better, it will heal better. So you kind of like preparing the ground for post-operative recovery. After the repair, let's say if something was done vaginally, if it's vaginal repairs, I usually wait at least like 2 weeks just for sutures to heal. And then it depends on the comfort. Like ideally, I want them to use the vaginal estrogen, but I think some group of people, they might be uncomfortable with feeling the sutures inside of the vagina and that just like freaks them out. So I don't want them to be in like constant distress, just fearing of like using it. So I kind of like let them heal and then they restart the vaginal estrogen around like week 4 or like 6. But if they're totally comfortable using it, I say, okay, week 2, you can start.
Okay, good. Thank you. I have a question too about Vulcamed. Will you talk about that a little bit? Because I think a lot of people don't understand the use of it and how to know if they're a candidate, et cetera.
Yeah, well, I usually describe the like, and there are not only like Vulcamed, there are other options. Basically, it's like a different fillers for the urethra. And when we talk about like treatment for stress urinary incontinence, for urinary like urinary leakage associated with physical activities, so coughing, laughing, sneezing, if you're going towards like surgical management, you can get the fillers or you can get the facelift, going back to our face analogy. So the fillers is the Vulcamed or Carbidite, where we go with a small camera, we inject the filler under the urethral skin, under urethral mucosa, and it kind of like bulks up the urethra. So whenever your abdominal pressure increases, it kind of like works as the like this like buffer that like urine doesn't go through. It's a great option for women who has a mild urinary incontinence, meaning just like a little bit, like several drops of urine coming out when you're doing like a physical activity. If you have a severe stress urinary incontinence, you're probably not going to get the ideal result from just having those like urinary fillers. The downside is that majority of women will require another injection. And it could happen anywhere from like several months to several years. But at the same time, there is literally no downtime with like Vulcamed. You just have the injection done. Some cases you can have it done in your office. You can go have sex, go exercise, do anything. Like there's no restrictions. If you're someone who wants to have one procedure and like not dealing with stress urinary incontinence ever again, then sling would be like the better solution because it's a more permanent.
No, I appreciate you sharing that because I think sometimes people aren't sure exactly, oh, you know, what is it? You know, is it something that would work for me? You know, if they're going through that many pads a day, maybe it really isn't, you know what I mean? Something that's right for them. But just having them have the understanding, because I think sometimes, you know, people hear things, but they are not really clear about like, oh, how to utilize. I mean, it's just sort of like what you brought up about the laser and some of the different things, right? In the floor, there sometimes is confusion about, you know, oh, how to utilize that and where do I add it in, you know, to the things, you know, that I'm doing. So I appreciate you clarifying it because I think it helps people. And you know, our biggest thing, I think, you know, in our pelvic health world is for people to know, like, if they feel things that don't feel right or they don't feel good, that they need to actually find good providers like yourself to be able to know, oh, these are things that I should be doing to take care of myself here. you're not wanting a woman, you know, to have a leaky bladder for 20 years and think that's okay. We need to intervene sooner and intervene quicker.
Exactly. And also, like, 2 points that I want to add is, one is, some women, like, it can be difficult to go from, like, you just living your life, having a little bit of leakage, to surgery. Like, we all different in, like, how fast we want to find, like, a permanent solution. So it's okay to get the urethral bulking agent first, and then you can always go to the sling. So it's not like you have to pick, like, one or another. Like, you can start with injection, see how it works for you. Maybe it works great, so you never need to think about sling. Or maybe that was not for you, so you can still, like get sling. So having urethral bulking agent injected does not disqualify you from having, like, a sling in the future. And the second point that you brought up, and there is a lot of controversy about treating pelvic organ prolapse and urine stress urinary incontinence in women who are still in the childbearing age. One school of thought is, absolutely not. You cannot have sling. You cannot have a pelvic prolapse repaired until you're done having kids. Another school of thought is, well, if you're miserable to the point where you can't even have sex to get pregnant with your next kid, maybe we should go ahead and fix your incontinence, fix your prolapse, so you can move on with your life. And you might be already hearing which camp I belong to. So I truly believe that nobody should suffer with these conditions, because this pelvic floor conditions, it's so isolating that, like, you can fix it. And the reason why I think people so hesitant to treat younger women in, like, in the urogyn, like, I don't know if you're noticing, there's, like, different fears in different professions. Like, OBGYN don't want to take care of older women, and urogyn scared of, like, younger women. So I, like the main issue why people so hesitant about young women and pelvic floor disorders is, okay, what if she gets pregnant and she has another, like, vaginal birth, and all our repairs that disappear, she will develop other prolapse, or she, like, your sling not going to work as perfectly. Well, I believe that if it happens down the road, we can always address that. So let's treat what we have right now, and we live this life once, and we might live it, like, comfortably with a good, like life quality, not suffering with, like, incontinence. And if the problem happened, we'll deal with that. But let's not wait until you, like, 50. Like, I don't think it's reasonable to do it to women. I think it's, like, it, like, I just think if I were in that position, I would want to know that all the options are available, and that I'm not going to be disqualified for, like, some treatment just because I might want to have a baby in the future.
You know what? I really thank you for saying that. There's a whole raft of women out there that maybe have had a traumatic labor and delivery where they really needed interventions, and they were actually turned away from interventions. And I'll just segue this really quick, but I just want, you know, people to understand, you know, if you have something like that and you do not have a quality of life, you do not have to wait. And I stand in your camp very firmly, because if our quality of life is being that affected, and, you know, we don't have good bowel, bladder, and sexual health, we're not going to have intercourse, we're not going to have another baby, we're not going to do the things that maybe we want to do in our life. And I just want to let people know, just like you do, because there is these camps that exist out in the world. And maybe you can't wait till after you have your last baby because you don't feel good enough to even have another baby. And I just applaud you for saying that. I think it's really important. If a woman doesn't feel good, she has the right to choose to do what she needs to do in order to feel better. And reconstructive surgeries in the floor, they work well. And, you know, POPs, they work well when they're done by a good surgeon. And we have good net out and good results long term. So we need to actually encourage people, like if they're in that much, I mean, I just had a mom who, you know, six babies and she's saying like, Sherry, I'm like, no, you need to get this addressed. Like you have an anterior and posterior wall. You have to, like, there's no more now, you know, and, you know, we've done all the things that we can do, but like your quality of life is being effective and you have the right to take care of yourself the way you need to be taken care of.
Totally. And also, like, even said that, for some women, they don't want to. They have a, like a significant prolapse. They're young. So, okay, you're 100%. Uncomfortable when you're running. Take the pessary and you can use it. Mm-hmm. Like that might be the solution for that type of women because everyone is different. But I think at least knowing that there are an option that you don't have to like step in the bushes to push your uterus back inside, like it's also empowering.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, Alexandra, I've kept you way too long, I know. But I thank you so much for being on with us today. And I just appreciate so much of your information. And I know there's going to be tons of questions and people are going to want you back on again, because I think these are the things that we have to talk about. And we have to keep working on so that we share all this information and help women throughout their lifespan. So thank you again for your life's work. And thank you for your dedication to women's health, pelvic and sexual health. I just know long-term you're going to make such a huge difference. And I just thank you for that.
Thank you, Sherry. Thank you for having me. I hope that's helpful. And I think like people who really need to hear it, they hear it.
Absolutely. It's wonderful. And I will look forward to talking again. So thank you again.